Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate you being with us. And we have an interesting show today. We have an Iowa State student with us, Peter Benzoni, and he recently had a really successful example of participatory citizenship as members of the Iowa State University community. And we're going to talk with him, and we're looking forward to finding out what happened. Later in the show, Susan Guiasta, the public relations officer from the city of Ames, will join us for her monthly report to you on what's going on in Ames and what to expect from municipal life in the coming month. But first, we want to take a moment to focus on the natural world as we start out the show. And this is what we have in the way of weather predictions in the next few days. I know it's nice today. It's going to be rain, and more rain for the rest of the week. Tonight, drizzling rain is expected to start. There's about a 30% chance. And on Saturday, there will be rain with a 90% chance and possible thunderstorms at night, and more rain on Sunday. And it looks like next week the rain will taper off by Tuesday. Temperatures remain high during the days in the 40s range and are expected to remain so until they begin to drop next Wednesday. Nights should remain pretty warm, too, until Monday when they will begin to drop into the 20s. And we often like to start out the show with a phenology report. Phenology is the calendar of events of the natural world, animals and plants, as they fall into the days of the year. So our environmental reporter, Pat Schlarbaum, filed this report for us.
Phenology is the recording of nature's happenings when they occur. The first woodland hepatica blooming in the spring or the last osprey of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's focus on phenology is the return of rough-legged hawks. Rough-legged hawks migrate to Iowa this time of year from their far north country nesting areas. In the Arctic, there is an absence of trees, so these birds nest on the ground or atop a pile of rocks. The rough-legged hawks spend the summer capturing lemmings on the Arctic tundra, tending a cliffside nest under a sun that never sets. The rough-legged hawk gains its common name from its distinctive feathered legs. Winter is the time to see this large open country hawk in the U.S., where it may be perched on a fence post or hovering over a marsh or pasture on the hunt for small rodents. Often they can be seen perching on roadside fence posts. Similar to our resident red-tailed hawks, a rough-legged's wingspan is about 4 feet, and they are about 21 inches in length. In general, these birds have darker backs, a light-colored head and breast, with some dark streaking and a dark belly, whereas the red-tailed hawk quite often has a white belly with a belly band. The tail of the rough-legged hawk is broad and long with a dark tip and a white base. The wings are long and broad and have pale flight feathers with dark tips. There is a dark patch near the center or wrist of the wing. This species occurs in both light and dark forms. They can be almost white or almost black. While in Iowa, much of the diet of the rough-legged hawk consists of birds and rodents such as voles and mice, though it will also prey upon other small mammals like rabbits. This hawk hunts by hovering over the ground while searching out prey with its keen eyesight, dropping or swooping onto their prey. To recap, this is the time of year that we start to see rough-legged hawks. While similar in appearance to our resident red-tailed hawks, rough-legged hawks have, 1, feathers on their legs to their talons, and 2, they often hunt by hovering, and 3, a white patch at the base of their tail feathers, and 4, dark patches on underside of wing at the wrist or elbow joint. These birds bring a bit of the Arctic to Iowa each winter, and that's our rough-legged hawk focus on phenology for today. This is Pat Schlarbaum, and you're listening to KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames.
Once we were lonely islands, divided by horizons, 100,000 tribes surviving, scattered far and wide, hearing only stories.
distant territories, peering out across the miles between our shorelines. Then we harness nature's forces, straddled backs of horses, waging wars and crossing borders as our numbers. We bought and sold and traded, oceans were navigated, fates entwined by rails and roads and telephones. And cracked the code of flight, spoke via satellite at the speed of light, and now
this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people stories and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. And today we have with us an Iowa State student, Peter Benzoni. And you've been studying Arabic with lecturer Dr. Ginwa Alamin. On October 20th, Peter, you issued a press release stating, on September 30th, our intermediate Arabic professor, Ginwa Alamin, announced that she would have to suspend teaching Arabic at Iowa State during the next day because her work permit had yet to be reissued. As of October 20th, it still has yet to be issued, despite the fact that she's been waiting well over 8 months for her permit, even though this is normally a routine process taking 2 or 3 months. This disruption has caused significant upheaval in the program, prompting several students to drop Arabic altogether and significantly damaging the learning of all students, particularly beginning-level students. Now, today, this is old news, and this situation actually has been reversed, and Dr. Alamin has been reinstated at Iowa State. Is that correct?
Correct. I actually think, funnily, it was later the day, at that day that I issued that press release, that we actually found out. She's been reinstated. She's back teaching. We're very glad to have her back.
This is an interesting event, even though it's a few weeks past, simply in what it means in terms of an individual or individuals taking action to really affect their environment, to make something happen.
Yeah, and I think that change at any level begins at the community level. It's, you see this across political campaigns with grassroots. Everybody tries to build straight from the grassroots, and that's this is the type of efforts that you really want to look at.
At the end of this release that we just read, you state, "We will continue until an acceptable resolution is reached and Dr. Alamin is restored to her position." So that's quite a statement of commitment that you issued when you did that. So I want to ask you some about why you had that sense of commitment. Dr. Alamin is the sole Arabic lecturer at Iowa State?
Yeah, that's correct. A couple of other people are qualified to teach it, but she's the only lecturer that is available that has the necessary qualifications and time that she can commit to it.
Uh-huh. And you warned that the suspension of the classes would lead to cancellation of the program. So would you describe the Arabic program?
Yeah, so right now we have two levels of Arabic, Arabic 101, 102, which is the beginner level Arabic. We also have the intermediate level Arabic, which is Arabic 201, Arabic 202. And in the beginner level, you get introduced to a very different way of writing a language. Obviously, they use a different script. The Arabic language is actually built around three-letter roots. So DRS, for example, means a root that means study or school, that sort of related thing. So you learn those sort of things. You learn how to write and the basic construction of words in Arabic in the beginner level program, where in the intermediate you get to begin to get a lot more into the grammar and really starting to build your vocabulary a lot more. So you get to the point where you can actually speak full sentences, have a conversation in Arabic.
Mm-hmm. Peter, are you an Arabic student yourself, right?
That's correct.
What is your major at Iowa State?
I actually have three majors and a minor. Computer engineering and entrepreneurial studies is one of those. And then my other set of majors is political science and international studies with a focus on the Middle East and North Africa and international conflict.
Is that where the Arabic part comes in for you?
Correct. I had a choice between taking French and Arabic for that requirement for those classes, and you know, I think the world already has enough Francophones, so I figured this is a language that is very much in need in the context of today's world. And so I figured I'd do much more good in the world learning Arabic than if I did learning French.
Part of your studies is technical.
Yes, yes. And computer engineering is very technical. That's actually what my day job is, too.
You're a computer engineer?
Computer engineer. Yeah, I do. I work for the Department of Energy in the cybersecurity area.
And then on the other side, you're interested in Middle Eastern politics.
Mm-hmm.
And how does this all add up to you? What role does Arabic play for you?
So I actually worked at the U.S. mission to NATO briefly in 2014, actually, during the rise of ISIS. And so it's beyond just working for a three-letter agency, I think that there's a lot of opportunities to promote understanding in the world. But in order to do that, we need to be able to have a conversation with each other. And one way to do that is through languages, because language really shapes the way one thinks. And so you can't have a conversation completely in English when you're speaking to somebody in Arabic, because they think fundamentally different than we do because of the way that their language is structured. I mean, this is true across any language, French or Russian or Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's really about understanding somebody in the context of their own language.
You're anticipating in your professional world speaking with a lot of people who speak Arabic as their national language.
Whether or not I do, I think that the experience is important. But yes, I would love to have that opportunity. Absolutely, potentially either in the private sector or in the public as part of public service.
Let's back up here just for a minute, because you said two really big words. You said you worked for NATO,
U.S. mission to NATO, correct?
U.S. mission to NATO, and because of the rise of ISIS. Okay, those are big words.
Or Daesh. Yes.
What exactly were you doing?
So a lot of what I did revolved around planning the U.S. summit in Wales. I can't go into too much detail just because I don't want to mess with my security clearance.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of what I did was researching basically briefs using both public sources and then some secret documentation that we have. That in areas relating to both Middle East factors and other areas like Russia was also a huge mm-hmm. concern at that time with MH-70 coming down in eastern Ukraine.
And you were doing this here in Ames?
No, this was in Brussels, Belgium, actually. I lived overseas for 3 months.
Okay.
Actually, just I applied not exactly on a whim, but without really a lot of expectations to that mm-hmm. internship. And so one day at 8:30 in the morning, they call me and I'm groggy and they're like, "Hey, this is the U.S. mission to NATO. Can we give you – this is a good time for an interview?" And I basically was like, yeah, I guess, and ended up getting the job.
Wow.
Which is really – it was a really great opportunity, and it's incredible the way that international diplomacy is done. It's not the way people think it is. It's not a smoke-filled room with guys with a bunch of cigars. It's a very complex process.
Well, that's a whole topic unto itself.
It is.
Speaking of international diplomacy, let's get back to the Arabic class at Iowa State.
Absolutely.
Basically, the story was that through, I assume, a number of bureaucratic snafus, the work permit didn't happen in a timely fashion, and there was a danger that Dr. Alamine would lose her position at Iowa State, or had lost it. So you took action. So what exactly did you do?
Sure. So we started out with just a pretty simple campaign. It started out with writing two sets of letters, one to basically government officials. This would be our senators, representatives, etc., both at the state and national level. And then by also writing another letter to university officials. Both of them pointed at kind of different areas, just because the concerns that university officials have aren't the same concerns that a government official has. So we then took these letters, brought them around, showed them to Arabic classes, people that Professor Alamine had impacted, and said, "Hey, look, this is our effort. This is what we're trying to do. We want to get her reinstated." got about 100 signatures on that, and then hand-delivered those letters to university officials and went ahead and sent out the rest of the letters with all of these with copies of those signatures to various the various U.S. and state representatives that we wanted to. We then started contacting. Basically, we gave that a week.
And you also sent it to the Customs and Immigration.
Yeah, right? U.S. Customs and Immigration Service. That's correct. Mm-hmm. I think we addressed it to the head of it, but it was to the U.S. Customs and Immigration in general. And so then we started contacting media and slowly wanted to put as much pressure as we could, given our relatively limited power. And basically, we then met with the university university officials. They talked to us about what they could and couldn't do. And from there, we basically played a game of waiting and trying to moderate how much push that we give, just because if you push too much, if you make somebody look bad, you tend to – it's a fine line between pushing for something and then putting somebody as your enemy. So we definitely tried to frame it as a collaborative effort with the university and us as students, trying to bring our efforts together to bring Dr. Alamine back.
You described in the release as Dr. Alamine as being beloved by your students. Can you explain?
Absolutely. So one of the examples I like to do this is, if you go to her office hours, there's almost always two or three students in there. Half the time they're doing classwork, half the time they're in there just chatting with her about life in general. She, for example, when she found out about her efforts, she contacted one of the students that she is like that and gave me a call and was like, "Hey, I just wanted you to know, I really appreciate what you're doing," and that basically she's not afraid to show her, I don't know if affection is the right word, but that she values her students and that she's really does care about the success of her students. Even me, I can't say that I'm the most studied student in the Arabic program, but that she really has shown me that she cares about my success. She will put in the time if I ask her to do that. And I think that really comes across and with our appreciation for her.
And now you succeeded in turning this around. What do you think was the deciding factor? What actually happened that made the change happen?
So I don't know that there's a single deciding factor, but I do think that the actually contacting our senator's offices seem to be the most successful way to do this. So I come from the political left, but Joni Ernst's office was extremely helpful in this regard. I don't know whether it was necessarily our efforts at the university contacting her or Dr. Alamine. But I do think that it was basically putting that pressure, asking our representatives to do this for us, to basically represent us as their constituents, and to do that it is because we asked. Basically, to get anything done, you have first to ask. So it is because we asked, and we were able to ask in the right context and apply the right way, that I think that we were able to create that change.
And what do you see as the right way? It's really interesting to find out how change actually happens, and so I'm curious, what do you think was what you're describing as the right way to ask to make that change possible?
So I think that's definitely coming at it from a collaborative angle, because as soon as you set somebody oppositional to you, you are not going to change their mind. They're not going to take action to help you, because basically they're opposed to you. Why would you help somebody you perceive as your enemy? So you have to frame what you're asking for in such a way that the other person wants it too.
When you went to Joni Ernst's office, or when you spoke with the Iowa State officials,
yeah,
how did you frame this?
So I think the Iowa State officials are a better example here. We framed it so that the We said, hey, look, we know you're putting in effort. We know that this is a complicated, sensitive situation where you can't even give us all the information because it is somebody's immigration mm-hmm. status. It's not something you can just release. So we said we don't want to make this story about how the university screwed over basically Dr. Al-Amin, but how the university and students came together to help this valued professor at Iowa State to get her job back and to solve this issue. So even in our talks with them, we definitely started out from how can we come together to solve this rather than why didn't you guys do enough to stop this?
When you wrote this release, you said you were going to follow through with this until an acceptable mm-hmm. resolution was reached. Did you really believe when you started this process that would actually happen?
I don't know that it's almost that I didn't think that far ahead. I didn't know whether or not I'd be successful, but I knew I had to try. So yes, maybe it wouldn't have been successful. That was always a distinct possibility, mm-hmm. but I just knew that I had to try,
and what
and
kind
I knew
of
that I had to go as long as I reasonably could. And
so you were really committed to this.
I was, yeah.
And when you spoke to other students, getting signatures from them, what kind of things did they say?
A lot of what I mentioned in that letter there, that basically that how she brought students, international students, and American students together, how she promoted learning and promoted basically a dialogue. She actually helps run a lot of the Free Syria, the basically events on campus that bring together students. So from again and again, from students and professors, not even if they weren't able to sign for, you know, political reasons, we heard from each and every person that, yeah, we love this professor and this situation really, really sucks. And they basically, a lot of them asked, hey, what can I do to change it? And, for example, the president of the Arabic Student Association took a bunch of signature sheets and went out and got 25 signatures in like an hour. It really showed our appreciation for her. Mm-hmm.
So this is Local Talk on KHY Community Radio. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and we're speaking with an Iowa State student who recently took action when his Arabic teacher, professor, Dr. Ginwa Al-Amin, had to suspend her Arabic language classes at Iowa State. The routine process to issue her work permit had failed somehow, and that's when Peter went into action, writing letters to the Iowa State administration, to state and national legislatures, and Board of Regents and the immigrations. And they collected 100 signatures, as he was just describing, in support of Dr. Al-Amin, and arranged meetings with university officials and legislatures. And finally, as a result of these efforts, Dr. Al-Amin has been reinstated as a lecturer at Iowa State. And we've been speaking with Peter Benzoni, one of the organizers of this effort. An interesting story, both in international relations and in local politics. As they say, politics is local. Mm-hmm. It starts locally, and effecting positive change is always an accomplishment. In your letter to the university, you wrote these words: Syria, Dr. Al-Amin's country of origin, is in the midst of one of the world's worst conflicts. The U.S. has pledged to help the rapidly expanding Syrian diaspora and refugees of that crisis as best it can, and yet here in the heart of the nation, at a school that prides itself on helping those in need, it is a failing, a shining example of what Syria and its citizenry can offer. What message does it send to those looking to America for hope to see such treatment? That's what you wrote at that time. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we have to say this isn't exactly what happened. In fact, Dr. Al-Amin was reinstated. Somewhere along the line, actions were taken to right the situation. But it's an interesting statement that you made at the time. Obviously, you were trying to add diplomatic pressure, as you mm-hmm. say. But what you're invoking, in a sense, is the role of Iowa State as a model for greater good. Can you elaborate a little bit on what exactly you were appealing to there?
Yeah. So basically a while back, Obama obviously put out a pledge to take a certain number of Syrian refugees. But I think if we look at Iowa State's history, it really has a history of reaching out and trying to help those in need, and to being a leader in promoting the positive change that we really want to see in the world, from feeding the world essentially to even being a leader in integration and diversity. And I mean, especially the great one is the World Food Prize. We're part of that effort that feeds basically the entire world. So it's always a bit disappointing to me when we see this great institution with this great history of trying to help those in need, and basically having it fail at that mission. Obviously now it's succeeded, but
well, it's interesting because, I mean, what you're saying, it can sound very lofty,
yes.
You know,
yes.
and it can sound in a way like spin when you talk about a university, what it should be achieving or how we'd like to think of it. And the question is always, is that really happening in real ways or not? I'm curious, with what happened here with Dr. Alamine, do you feel that, in fact, the rubber hit the road with that? Do you feel that you were reassured that actually those ideals have real practical application at Iowa State in making sure this program still exists?
Okay, exactly. I think especially at the academic level is where sort of ideals meet reality. So I think that the basically universities have been proving grounds for decades for these ideas, which later become central to the society. So yeah, I think that you hit it perfectly. This is where the rubber hit the road on those ideals, and it's where we can show our appreciation for and willingness to take in basically those in need. In this particular case, Syrians and especially very 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 qualified Syrians. I think people a lot of the time perceive Syria as a bunch of uneducated, unwashed masses, which couldn't be farther from the truth. So many of these refugees have bachelor's and master's degrees and are extremely intelligent people who speak better English than I do sometimes.
How do you know that?
Because I've spoken to a few of them. I have more than a few family friends who are doctors and professors that are of Syrian origin or came directly from Syria, and they are some of the most intelligent people I've ever met. And if you just look at the stories of these Syrians, it's people with bachelor's degrees who are fleeing this fighting, people's master's degrees from often American institutions.
You've described in your release that Dr. Alamine actually has been making efforts to increase communication with Arabs in our local community and to help with the language learning by creating the Arab Student Association and creating events like Arabic field trips.
Yeah, so we Pamel Grocery is the closest thing Ames has to a meeting point for Arab diaspora here in Ames. So we basically wanted to get into what community Ames has to offer in the Arab, what Arab community that Ames has to offer. And this is the best way we could do it in that context. But I think
so
the
what did
ASA,
you do?
We just went to the Pamel Grocery. We actually had to go and order our orders in Arabic, which the people of Pamel Grocery thought was hilarious because we were just messing up things left and right.
Did they understand you?
Yeah, they did understand us, but it was I don't know that I asked for things exactly the way that I was supposed to, but it was very simplistic. So rather than saying, you know, falafel, we'd have to say khubz, which means bread, and khubz wa hummus, which we'd ask for this, like, very slowly, very complexly, using basically some very simple words that we knew. It was a bit ridiculous, honestly. But yeah, they were able to understand us, and they were very, very patient. But I think that the Arab Student Association highlights an even better example of that. Basically, her ability to promote that cross-cultural understanding, which is really I know she's probably doesn't want me to highlight it too much or doesn't want to be lifted up too much, but she is really, really great at that. I think that's what, beyond even just language learning, is she's amazing at promoting cross-cultural understanding. Mm-hmm. She actually came to another one of my classes and basically was willing to talk about what the hijab means, what Islam means to her, that sort of thing. And I think it's that willingness to promote cultural understanding is, again, one of those things that makes her so beloved.
Do you see cultural misunderstandings happening at Iowa State, especially in the light of recent tensions around what's happened in Paris and San Bernardino?
Yeah, you saw that, for example, at the Iowa-Iowa State football game where that protester tore a Latino student's sign. I actually know the student that happened to very personally, and even Latino students who are relatively integrated compared to the general perception, at least, of Arab students, which I think Arabs in the United States. You see a lot of that hatred at Iowa State, which is sad, but I think that it's good in a way because it gives us an opportunity.
Brings it to the surface.
Brings it to the surface. Gives it an opportunity to create that dialogue and to change people's, really, their hearts and minds.
You do see a dialogue happening at Iowa State
with
the Arabic students.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think it's a part of a broader dialogue on race and ethnicity that's happening across the nation. In a variety of different ways, from Black Lives Matters to immigration reform to the Syrian to the refugee crisis, I think we're having a lot of a huge dialogue about race and ethnicity, and there's a lot of growing pains associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you sometimes get some kind of hateful speech. Sometimes you get people who want to build a wall or want to ban Muslims from coming into the country altogether, but I don't think that should stop the dialogue, and I don't think that we should let that kind of rhetoric get that understanding off track.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see a lot of people really committed to that dialogue and to understanding and trying to bring people together rather than tear them apart.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. It's a
Absolutely.
Huge topic these days and growing, right?
Sure,
go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight this was not at all my sole effort, especially Sam and Kareem. So Samantha was really the one that was hitting the ground hard there. She collected the majority of our signatures. Kareem collected a ton of signatures and really got it out in the Arab student community. So I just wanted to make sure that I highlighted
their full names?
Samantha Cancelar, and I don't remember Kareem's last name off the top of my head, but...
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much for telling us the whole story. And are things back to normal now with the Arabic program?
Largely, yeah. I think we're still a little behind from where we perhaps should be. Our professor, for example, would have liked to finish our current book, where we're still about three chapters out on that. But yeah, everything's largely back to normal. And I wanted to highlight the fact that the person that they brought in to basically assist in the meantime with the transition, she really got pushed into a position that would be extremely difficult for anyone. And, you know, I don't necessarily know that she gets appreciated enough for how much bravery and courage she had in stepping up to try and help us, even though she had no teaching experience and was being thrown into this at a moment's notice. So Dr. Eileen did a fantastic job given the tools she was given in extremely short notice.
Hmm. Thank you for coming, Peter Benzoni. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events in central Iowa. Peter is an Iowa State student who recently took action when his Arabic professor, Dr. Ginwa Alamin, had to suspend her classes due to a work permit problem. Peter and the people he worked with were successful in being catalysts for change. And really a comprehensive strategy planned to bring the situation back into alignment at a time when international relations are really on everybody's mind. So thank you for taking time to talk with us about these events.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Once we were lonely islands, divided by horizons. 100,000 tribes surviving, scattered far and wide. Hearing only stories of distant territories, peering out across the miles between our shores. Then
harness nature's forces, straddled backs of horses, waging wars and crossing borders as our numbers. We bought and sold and traded, oceans were navigated, fates entwined by rails and roads and telephones and streets. Cracked the code of flight, spoke via satellite at the speed of light, and now it's feeling like a small town with 6 billion people downtown at a little sidewalk fair in Earth Town Square. There, a German selling Audis filled with gasoline from Saudis to Australians sipping Kenyan coffee in their shiny shoes. Argentines are meeting Mongols over French fries at McDonald's.
Earth Town Square by Peter Mayer. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. And I'm here with Susan Gwiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Thank you for joining us, Susan.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
It's always really, really nice to have you when you come in and tell us what's happening with the life of the City of Ames. So I wanted to start out by asking you about the power plant, because my office looks out the window on this power plant and really dramatic things are happening. Last night there was this beautiful lighting on the power plant in the evening. So I'm sure that wasn't for my benefit, but tell us what's going. First, I want to ask you a question real quick. We had one day that was very, very windy, and then it looked like all the panels on the power plant were off after that. Was that the wind, or was that just part of a bigger process?
So I think what you might be seeing is the cooling towers, which are located to the west of the power plant. And those, over the last few months, have been completely taken down and replaced. And it actually has gone very quickly. There are two separate cooling towers. One was replaced a little bit earlier in the fall, and then the most recent cooling tower just was replaced in the last week or two, and that might have been what you're seeing. Those structures, they come down quickly. The old ones were wood. The new ones go back up. They're preformed. And it's amazing how quickly that process works. And that's all part of the improvements going on at the power plant.
What is the improvement?
Well, the improvements are the conversion. Mm-hmm. So you probably are aware of the fact that for years and years, our City of Ames power plant has burned coal as its primary source of fuel. That has been supplemented by what's called RDF, the refuse-derived fuel. We are one of the few very unique systems in the country where we turn waste into energy. And we were the first municipally operated waste-to-energy facility in 1975. We celebrated 40 years recently. That waste-to-energy process will continue, but we are converting the power plant from a coal-burning power plant to a natural gas-burning power plant. That is to put us in compliance with some new EPA regulations, and also it will reduce our carbon emission of carbon gases by 40%. And so that's what you've been seeing. It is a remarkable improvement. What you've been seeing is the installation of the natural gas pipeline that has been completed. I just recently got an update from our Ames Electric Services Director, Don Kamm, and he did say inside the plant, the old coal burners in Unit 8 have been removed, and the new natural gas burners are being installed, and plans are to have Unit 8 online operating with natural gas by February 1st. So it's been long time coming. It's been more than a year to have this conversion take place, but we're kind of nearing the finish line.
Are the cooling towers going back up?
Yes, cooling towers are part of the process of the producing electricity. So you may not even noticed it. Sometimes they go down and up almost, it seems like the same day, but it's probably a week-long process. So I believe the final cooling tower has been replaced.
Mm-hmm.
So very interesting.
It is very interesting. Yeah.
Unique process, so much activity. If you've had to go to what we call the utility campus, which includes the water plant and power plant recently, if you have had to get into that area, lots of trucks, lots of construction, just a lot of activity going on. And already you have got Banjo Park, and with the beautiful weather we've been having, a lot of people are over there watching. It's been really exciting.
It's very interesting. Is anybody documenting it?
Yep. We are out taking video. We take pictures. We get updates. And
are those going to be available to be seen?
Well, at some point, yes. We'll wrap those all together and release those.
Speaking of big projects, I wanted to ask you about the blue pipes on 13th Street.
Sure.
What are those blue pipes?
Those are all part of the building of our new water plant. That water plant is going up on 13th Street.
That's east of Duff.
Yes, east of the river, and right up on, kind of on the rise on the hill, on property that used to be owned by the National Animal Disease Lab. That is city property by Zylstra Harley. So that's how people sort of recognize that area, is by the motorcycle shop. But the new water plant is being constructed there. It's kind of behind the ridge, so you don't see it. But what you do see is a huge crane. So that sort of marks the spot. The blue pipes are part of the infrastructure, the location of the water plant on 13th Street, the way it's situated. It will be able to tie into existing infrastructure from the old water plant, which is right next to the power plant. And so those blue pipes are sort of that tie-in. The water will go under the river and tie in to existing infrastructure. That process still is a ways out. We won't be seeing water from that water plant till 2017.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
So,
lots of stuff going on at the City of Ames this month of December. Just some reminders. Obviously, we'll be closed for the holiday. So if you have city business, you need to remember between Thursday, December 24th and Friday, December 25th, City Hall and most city offices will be closed. So come visit us Wednesday or Monday. Also, we do have an outgoing City Council member. City Council member Matthew Goodman has been serving the City of Ames and Ames residents for 12 years. And he will be finishing up his final year this December. And we have a reception planned for him from 4 to 5:30 p.m. on Wednesday, December 16th at the Ames Public Library. That is a public reception. We invite the public to come and thank him for his many, many years of service. At this point, he is the longest standing council member. And
thank you, Matthew.
Yeah, serving three terms is a lot. It does take a lot of time. I don't know that residents realize how much time it does take to serve on council in addition to long meetings. There's a lot of research and citizen input and just analysis of issues that takes place. So we'll have the swearing-in service for Matthew's replacement. That's Brahman Beatty Hansen. That'll take place on Wednesday, December 23rd, and I'll get more information out on that. That'll be on our website very soon. And then she takes office January 1st.
I saw Bronwyn at the food co-op the other day, and she said she was in the midst of her orientation.
So also a very long process. They spend hours, when council members first get elected to serve, they spend hours and hours touring the various departments and meeting with department heads. It takes a long time to get up to speed. They start the process of serving as council members in January, and we're kind of in the midst of budget. So those budget books are pretty thick, and what we see with Brahman and other recently elected council persons is they often start attending meetings very early on in the process. Mm-hmm. They've often been attending meetings through the elections. So they've already been doing a lot of the footwork and kind of creating this foundation of knowledge. But most of them will tell you it still is it's a pretty steep learning curve, and it takes them a while to feel like they really understand the process. And we try our hardest to get them up to speed as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. Okay.
So you may have noticed, if you ever go to cityofames.org, our website looks a little different. We launched a new a redesigned website at the end of November. Very exciting for us. The website had been redesigned 4 or 5 years ago, which in the world of the web is kind of a long time. We were a little bit on the older side. Some new technology that our website features. It's called responsive design. So we know that a lot of people accessing our web are going to it from mobile units, either their phone or a tablet. And the old website just simply shrunk. So it was a giant website, and then it looked like this very same website on your phone. It was really kind of difficult to navigate and not very user-friendly. The responsive design immediately sort of shrinks the navigation and the features to fit the size of your screen. And so that's helpful. We had gotten some we had taken a lot of comments about how the website doesn't meet user need. And so the new website is a lot cleaner, a lot fewer buttons on the front, a lot easier to navigate, I hope, more intuitive for users. So you can still do – I still spend a lot of time telling people all the great things they can do online. In our community, being able to start and stop your utilities online, being able to pay your bills online, being able to pay parking tickets online. There are a lot of things that you don't have to come into City Hall that you used to have to do. Mm-hmm. You can sign up for Parks and Recreation classes. You can watch City Council meetings via video streaming or video archive. So just a lot of great things that you can do online, with sort of building towards the idea that, you know, we're not open 24 hours a day at City Hall, but you can access a lot of city services 24 hours a day just simply by going to the website. And again, that is cityofames.org. And if you haven't seen it, please check it out. We want people's comments and feedback. We did some surveying before we launched a new design to ask people what they wanted, and we got a lot of feedback that it was too cluttered, too busy. And so I hope that people are pleased with what they see.
Okay. Give the website again.
Cityofames.org.
Okay.
So,
Cityofames.org.
Take a look at that.
Okay. We gonna
We've got some
talk traffic?
Traffic updates.
Traffic. Okay.
So today, Friday, today is a day that a lot of people have been looking forward to. If you travel in sort of the South Ames area and you drive on University Boulevard, you have probably gotten quite tired of the construction and delays going on at University and Airport Road. Mm-hmm. We are in the process of opening the roundabout, so we hope that that opens. Well, I don't hope. We expect that to open sometime today.
Today.
Today is the day. And so for people who
You heard it first.
Yeah, today is
the day. KHOI.
So if you've been used to driving, we've been detouring traffic kind of over the roundabout, which is not how you drive on a roundabout. The whole concept of a roundabout is right angles and traffic flow. And today's the day that you get to go around. You don't go over it. So we know that it'll take some getting used to. A lot of motorists are not used to driving roundabouts. It's not a common traffic feature of this part of the country. But they've been very successful other places, and they really do keep traffic flowing. So for motorists, that roundabout should open today. We do know that we're behind on the bike and pedestrian access, and it has been a very, very tough construction year this season.
Because of the rain.
The rain was really hard. We have many projects that are behind, and we're going to have to do some finishing up in the spring. I feel badly for the pedestrians and bikes who have had to work around all the construction going on this summer, and we will get to them as quickly as we can when the season starts again in the spring. We have already started some of the design work for construction projects coming up, and we've been trying to get that information out. We have we had a public meeting this past week already for a series of West Ames pavement improvement projects, and that was well attended. Those were a lot of residential streets, and those people got typically, if there is construction going on in your neighborhood, you will get a letter directly from the city that says, hey, you're going to be affected by construction. So in the next couple of weeks, people will want to be watching their mailboxes, particularly if they live on a street where they think it looks a little rough. So the first part of that process is we send out letters. We let people know that their street may be up for reconstruction or resurfacing. And then we also schedule public meetings, because just because you don't live on that street doesn't mean you don't drive on it. So we have one coming up for Friley Road. That's not a very large road, but that's in the South Campus Town area. It's a residential street. That's December 14th from 5:30 to 7 at Parks and Recreation Office. And that is talking about the process of fixing and improving that street. We also have street improvements planned for Clark Avenue. There's been a lot of downtown area construction this season. That will continue next spring. From Main Street to Lincoln Way, Clark will be closed For periods of time, while they do some improvements there, if you've driven on that road recently, it's a bit rough. Mm-hmm. And so this would be a nice improvement to see. That meeting about improvements to Clark Avenue from Main to Lincoln Way will be 5:30 to 7 on Monday, December 21st at City Hall. Again, we welcome the public to attend those meetings, give their comments if they're concerned about access or, there's some, we improve those streets with handicapped accessible ramps. Anybody that has concerns about those projects should attend these meetings. And if they can't attend, please check out our website. There's contact information to contact the project engineers on those projects.
Okay, and one last question. 6th Street has been closed. What's the time frame on that for the bridge construction by Brookside Park?
Good, but yes, 6th Street is closed. That project will take almost a year to complete. It will be ready by the school year of 2016. So when people go back to school next year, new bridge.
Okay. Before we end, any last words?
Well, we have our neighborhood sculpture program, which we talked about last time. Those are those sculptures that are around on Main Street. If you really love some of those sculptures, and some of them are really, really beautiful this year, think about applying to have those in your neighborhood. That application is on our website, cityofames.org/PAC. That stands for Public Art Commission. You can get more information about the sculptures and how to apply to get those one of those in your neighborhood.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anything else, or are we?
No, thank you for having me. It's always great to come and share this information. So much is happening at the City of Ames, and we have such great residents who are so active and involved that I love being able to share the information.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. In the first half of and I've been speaking with Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Thank you, Susan, for joining us. I look forward to speaking again next month. And in the first half of the program, we spoke with ISU student Peter Benzoni, and he was talking about his work in reinstating the Arabic program at Iowa State. Thank you for listening to Local Talk today. The show is really every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also hear a recording of the show at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll also get informational links to the people and places and things that we've talked about. Local Talk was engineered today by Jonah DeGeese. Thank you, Jonah. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Earthtown Square by Peter Mayer. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means that you can be part of the team of volunteer reporters if you're interested, and we'll work with you and train you, and it's really a lot of fun. If you'd like to join the team, we are at 292-2878 or at khoifm.org. A heartfelt thank you to those of you who have made membership donations in the past month during our membership drive, and it's still very much going on until the end of the year. So we ask you to join KHOI if you have not joined yet. It's a $55 membership or a $100 premium membership. And if you can, please consider becoming one of the 500 family group that donates $250 or more to build a solid foundation for KHOI. You can make a donation at khoifm.org, or you can find our address there if you'd like to send us a check, or just come by at 410 Douglas so we can personally show you how much it means to us. Thank you for listening today. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends, and remember that your participation as the audience is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.